Gang, are you tired of being in the band of schmoes and you're ready to make the leap to the band of pros? Well, there's one way to do that, and that is rehearsing. I suggest Space. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. 31 spacious rooms, some even have windows, fantastic PAs, great and helpful staff. Go to Space Rehearsal and Recording. Find them at 512-443-9518 or at spaceatx.com. That's Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Alright, hello gang. I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I'm coming to you from a remote location. My doggy mama Taylor's house. I stayed with Taylor last night while his mom went out of town for the night. We had a great night. It did storm this morning and he was a little bent out of shape about the whole storm thing and followed me around everywhere. I hope you guys all had a great weekend, whatever it is that you do on the weekend. I've got a great show for you guys today. My dear old friend, producer, musician, songwriter, Mark Addison is on the show today. You might know Mark Addison from his band The Borrowers, Kitty Gordon, also his many productions. He's produced records for Will Sexton, Band of Heathens, Bob Schneider, Ian Moore, Jess Klein, Jeff Klein, Taylor Davis, and even my band Gowdy's second record, Effects of Madness. We did it with him, and he had a label at the time, this sort of like a communal label where all the artists took part and worked on each other's releases and stuff. It was called India Records. We put that record out in, I think, the end of 2001, beginning of 2002. It was a great record. I had a great time working with him. I've written songs with him for years. And he's a great, amazing songwriter. I mean, he's had his songs covered by Edwin McCain, Cher, Joan Baez, Gene Simmons from Kiss. You know, it's weird. I should have talked to him about, you know, Cher and Gene Simmons had a thing in the 70s. That's weird. He wrote songs for both of those people. Anyway, he's got a great story. It's a very deep story. He's a guy that was born in England. He moved to New York as a kid and then moved to Cleveland when he was a kid. And after high school, he started a band called The Generators, which was the band that that movie writer and director Paul Schrader followed around and turned them into the Barbusters for the movie The Light of Day. And Mark Addison's even in that movie in a band with the great Trent Reznor. We talk all about that. Anyway, he's got a brand new band called 123 Scream, which is a collaboration with Jana Pochop. It's pop music with smart words for the weird times we live in, as it is okay to scream. So Jana Pochop and Mark Addison put together this band, 123 Scream, and they're releasing their debut EP, which is called Lit, this Friday, July 13th. They're not going to be playing any shows right now. They're doing this in a very unconventional way, in the ways that we've done it. They got together, did a song. It organically turned into something where they ended up doing six songs that were all released, that will all come out this Friday, July 13th. I'll be playing a couple of songs from the album, from the EP, Fault Lines and Money and Heart. That'll be coming up in just a second with a great conversation with Mark Addison. What a great artist, man. We've written songs together. We've hung out together. I met him in the 90s when he moved here with the Borrowers, and he moved in around the corner from me, like two blocks away, and I ended up hanging out with him all the time, and as the Borrowers thing kind of faded, he and I wrote songs together and kept up a partnership. We used to play live once a week at the Ritz. He and his former bandmate Nina from the Borrowers and Kitty Gordon both played with me and my friend Einar before we had our band Gowdy. We did a South by Southwest show together. I did this Prince, Einar and I did this Prince tribute album, and for all the shows for that, we played with Mark and Nina. So I have a great, great history with Mark, a great history. Like, we have a very a creative history. We have a great, we work very well together, and he does with many people. He's a great collaborator, which is what makes him such a great producer. So I will be talking, having this great conversation with Mark Addison in just a minute. Before we get to that, let me tell you what I did this weekend. On Friday, I went out to the Mohawk. I had the night off, so I went out to the Mohawk with my friends Anar and AJ Vallejo. To see the bands Western Youth and Graham Wilkinson, both great shows. I love hanging out at the Mohawk. It's a great place. Saturday, got in the car, drove to Houston to play a wedding. It was a great wedding. You know, sometimes the wedding party will ask for either the groom or the bride, or someone wants to get up and sing. And the bride wanted to get up and sing the Ike and Tina Turner version of Proud Mary. And so we learned that for them, and we did it. I kind of choked on some of the horn parts, I'll be honest with you. It's real fast, and I did the first one right. The rest of them I did kind of bad. But anyway, sometimes you never know what to expect from these people that get up and sing with you. You know? It's a crapshoot. It's a crapshoot, I tell you. Well, this girl got up, and she was incredible. Blew my mind. She was fantastic. Throughout the whole show, there was a beautiful blonde photographer going around shooting all these people. Every once in a while, she'd stop and smile and shoot me, and I had these fantasies of asking her if she needed a boyfriend because I was available for that sort of thing. But then I never talked to her. She got away. She'll just be a fantasy of mine for the rest of my life. Stayed in the Marriott that night. This was weird. When we finished the gig, I got in my car and my lights didn't work. Luckily, my high beams worked. So I drove back to my hotel with my high beams on, went to breakfast with my Aunt Olga, my grandmother. And then I came back to Austin to stay with my dog, Taylor, which is where I'm at, my doggy mama's house, Sandy. And Taylor and I had a great night. We hung out. I tried to watch the Justice League. Man, that movie sucks. I'm not going to lie, man. Every Zack Snyder superhero movie sucks. A lot of superhero movies suck, but that one particularly sucked. I'm saying it. Got to take my car into the shop today. Oh, hey, gang, listen. While you're out there, I want to tell you that I'm playing this Saturday, July 14th, at Cenote, up north. Me and my godson, Sean, he's going to play percussion. I'm going to play acoustic guitar. I think the show starts at 8. I will put an invite on our How Did I Get Here Facebook page. If you haven't liked our Facebook page, go to it and like it, all right? You'll see updates and stuff. You'll get the updates on the shows, and you'll see photos of me with all of our guests, including my guest today, Mark Addison, from the band 123 Scream, whose brand new EP comes out this Friday, July 13th. It is called Lit. Go to 123scream.com. And to find out more about Mark Addison's studio, at the Aries Studio, go to ariesstudio.com. That's ariesstudio.com. And find out more about it. So Mark and I met up at Space last week, Space Rehearsal and Recording, and we sat outside and had this conversation because it was a nice day. It wasn't super hot. So we sat down and did it and had this conversation outside. So when I got home and put this thing on the machine and ran it through the compressors, I realized that there's a lot of bird sounds going on throughout the whole thing. But you know what? After a little while, you kind of tune it out. You get used to it. But this is me and my dear old friend, Mark Addison, from the new band 123 Scream. Find them at 123scream.com. Their new album, Lit, comes out this Friday, July 13th. Enjoy my conversation with my dear old friend, Mark Addison, outside at Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down. Black Fret. How do you like doing that?
Well, I think it's awesome. I think it's an amazing program. I came into Black Fret like
pretty early on, yeah.
Right at the beginning. I had read something in an article teasing that it might be going to happen, and I thought it was a really great idea, and so I contacted Colin Kendrick and said, hey, let's sit down and have coffee and So I got on, you know, I was kind of there. I was the advisor. I was advisor number one before it had really started. And, yeah, it's been great to watch it grow. And I think the thing that I really like about it is that the members of Black Fret are extremely involved in music. They are constantly bringing up new bands that people should go see. And for someone like me who doesn't get out that much, it's great because it's like I have 450 other people out there checking out the scene and telling me, you know, giving me ideas about things to listen to. Yeah. So I really appreciate it. But in terms of the fact that they've given over $1 million away in 4 years in grants to artists, amazing. You know, and I have ties, I have pretty strong ties to Cleveland, Ohio because I was raised there. I've spent some time there recently because there's a couple of bands up there I'm talking about working with.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I'm thinking of building a studio up there, actually. But anyway, the issues that all musicians face in this new model of the music industry, which has its ups and downs, the issues that they face are very real, and they're every city in the country. You know, these people are struggling to figure out how they're going to make money making music. And when I start telling them about what's happening in Austin, their jaws drop.
Yeah.
Their jaws drop. They go, are you kidding me?
We have health insurance. We have
psychological
help.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we have these dudes that just give you,
a
ton of money.
So it's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. And having gone through, you ran the gamut, like a dude in the van in Ohio, the borrowers, major publishing deal, major record deal, then independent. You started an independent label that I was on. All these other people were on. And then now when you're doing 1-2-3 Scream, when you're releasing this record, what are you doing? Like what, you know what I mean?
Well, I tell people I've worn a lot of different hats in the music industry, and I've demonstrated how not to do it.
Yeah.
In a lot of those disciplines. I mean, I've run a record label, I've managed an artist, I've been managed, I've been signed to a label, I've been a sideman, I've been a frontman many times, I've been a sideman many times. I used to play with Gary Lewis and the Playboys, for God's sake.
Wow.
One of the later iterations.
Right. Where there was like one guy or something.
It was Gary.
Yeah.
I've played all those games, and I'm to the point where I don't, I've been in the business for 45 years, really. I mean, I'm 61.
Yeah.
So I've been in the business a long time. So I don't really have to do anything. It's like I'm kind of doing what I like to do. And I ran into out where my studio is, which is in Cal Country, southeast Austin, up on a little hill. We have a house concert series called Tips Concerts.
Right.
And last year, Susan Gibson and Jana Pochop and was it Kelly McQueen? I can't remember who it was. Played, and I'd known Jana for a long time because she's a great executor and for local artists and like putting out records. I don't know if executor is the best word. She's a great person to help you put out a record, to do social media campaigns and all this stuff, and I knew her in that capacity. And then she got up on stage and played this song that just floored me. And it was folk rap.
Right.
And I was like, we have to record that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we recorded it, and then it was like, what else you got?
Yeah.
And she had all these other songs. And Jana's a really interesting person because she's kind of the perfect straight folk girl, except that she's a huge fan of Taylor Swift and Eminem.
Right.
And like all of these disparate different kinds of music. So we're talking about how hard it is for an artist to promote themselves, which I think every artist and probably every producer and every, you know, everybody's in the business. The business is all about networking and promoting yourself, your name. And it's really hard for artists to do for themselves because you have to write all this stuff about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and where's the perspective?
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, we should do a band where it's not you and it's not me and it's called this.
Right.
And let's just do some songs and let's have no limits on what we do. Let's not be concerned about whether about any of the stuff that you're normally concerned about
right,
when you're
right.
doing a record.
Right.
You know, normally you're doing a record, you go, well, is this a good representation of what I do? And is this relevant? And is
right.
it modern enough? Or is it throwback enough? Or is it reverby enough? Or,
right.
you know, how does it fit in?
Right.
And we were like, let's just do a record and have no limits on what we do. And let's just have fun. And so we started recording. And it was just so much fun. And the process is, she, you know, she'll come in and she'll say, I've got this song, and she'll play it, and I'll go, okay, let's record it. And we'll record the song, we'll record
right.
the vocal, we'll record the guitar, you know, to a click or something, and then I'll go, okay, come back in a week.
You'll lay down a bunch of stuff.
And then a week later, I'll stay up late at night and throw stuff at it.
Yeah.
And play around with it, and then she comes back and says, well, I really like this, and that's weird, but what if we try this, And we ended up with this little record that we both think is quite charming.
I think it's great.
And it's not Jana, and it's not me. It's not what I would do if I was going to make a record. And
right.
I don't think it's what Jana would do if she was going to make a record. But it's been an outlet for us to do things that stretch us a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
And there's definitely like a lot of music to deal with now times, like this new era. Does the name reflect that? Like 1, 2, 3, scream, because that's how you kind of feel right now. There's a lot of
the name and part of the sort of driving force, I think, is yes, disillusionment with what's going on in the country
right
now. But you couple that with the themes that a lot of artists have to deal with in getting their music across and being musicians. So it's sort of about being an artist, and it's sort of about what's going on.
Yeah.
The song Money and Hearts, which was the first
it's the last song on the CD,
but it's the first one we recorded.
Right.
That's the folk rap song.
Yeah.
And it's about being a musician in Austin.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think in the first verse, it's about how you're, you know, playing guitar in the checkout line in a grocery store.
Yeah.
Which is
very true.
Which is where Jana started, playing in the checkout line of a grocery store.
Wow.
Now, this is the only city in the nation where you could actually get a gig playing in the checkout line of a grocery store.
Right.
So that's kind of awesome in its own way.
Yeah.
But it's a very prescient song about being an artist today.
Yeah.
And so I think those are the two things that inform what we're doing. It's sort of what's going on in the country and what's going on in music.
Yeah.
And 1, 2, 3, scream, yeah, it's like, it's okay to scream. It's okay to, like, just, you gotta let that stuff out. You gotta say something about stuff.
Yeah. And it has a really fun feeling to it. The music, like when you're listening to it before you delve into the lyrics, it's a pretty good time.
It's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a great time.
Yeah.
A great time about not so great things.
Yeah, yeah. But that's great. I mean, how are you going to handle this kind of time, you know? So the record's called Lit. It's an EP. It comes out Friday, July 13th,
right.
2018. People can go to 123scream.com or probably find it wherever you download or stream music. Are you guys going to play out?
You know...
Do you have to...
I mean, I guess in a perfect world, there would be such demand that we would figure out how to put a band together around it.
Right.
Which is, you know, anything's possible.
Yeah.
At this point, we don't have any... We really tried to approach this with no game plan, which is probably stupid. It's like what we tell other people not to ever do.
Right.
But... In the spirit of keeping it to be of keeping it a labor of love and nothing else, you know, we said let's just do this,
see what happens,
and see what happens. So we have no expectations whatsoever.
Well, I mean, part of like what's going on now in our business, it's not a joke. Like that could be a strategy. You know what I mean? And you could have this huge record next year that people are like, oh my God, these people did nothing, like. They just made this record and just chilled out at their house Jana went on tour, I made other records for other people, and now we have this thing.
Stranger things have happened.
Like, yeah, didn't you? You had a Coke commercial with Wendy Colonna, didn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, like, those things, you don't set out to make a Coke commercial, did you?
Well, I think on, I think Wendy's done, we've done two or three things for Coke and other clients, but no, I think they started out using one of her songs for something, and then we did actually write a song for something for, I think we demoed a song for Coke.
Yeah.
That ended up being, we ended up expanding it and developing it as a track for her last record.
Yeah.
So it's called, it's called I'm Satisfied, I think. It started out as a Coke commercial. It's just a chorus. It's just a chorus.
Yeah.
And then when we were starting to work on the record, I kept on pointing to that song and saying, this just works for me. Let's write a song.
Yeah.
And so we went in and changed it.
Huh.
Yeah.
So let's go back. So you're born in England.
Yeah.
And when did you move to the States?
I moved to New York, Yonkers, New York, in 1963.
Okay.
When I was 6 years old, and I went to school number 5 in Yonkers, New York, and it was a horrifying experience.
What happened?
Because in England, we start school a year earlier.
Okay.
So I came to New York with a first grade education and was
put in first grade.
Put in kindergarten.
Oh,
I mean,
Jesus.
I was put in. Right. So and then all the kids kept asking me if I knew the Beatles, and I had no idea what that meant because they had just broken. But it was a very strange experience growing up in that situation because the teacher. I always got picked on. Mark will come up and read for the class because I was the best reader.
Right.
Because
right.
I didn't, not because I was smarter, but because I had started school a year
right,
earlier.
Right.
I always felt like I was totally odd. And I felt like I was totally odd all the way through high school. And I felt like I was odd. I didn't fit in with anybody. I was on the periphery of everything. I would, you know, in recess, I would be out there looking at ants or something while everybody else was playing kickball, you know.
Friends. Yeah, yeah.
And I was that way until, well, ninth grade when I joined my first rock and roll band.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, wow, this is awesome!
Yeah, you had friends.
Mr. Popular!
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that band called?
It was called the Astral Air Force.
Okay.
And it was this amazing band in Cleveland Heights High School in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. And they were amazing musicians. We did some of the, it was mostly covers, but we did some of the hardest material. We did Rosalita by Springsteen.
Right, right.
Which is a really hard band, yeah. A really hard song to play.
Epic.
Yeah, we did, Van Morrison's Caravan. We did, like, you know, just all this really esoteric. We did Weasels Rip My Flesh by Frank Zappa. We did all this crazy material. Yeah.
That's wild.
That was kind of how I started in
music. What were you playing, guitar?
I was playing keyboards and guitar.
Okay.
And then, you know, I was so enthralled by that that when it came time to exit high school, ungracefully. My parents insisted that I was going to go to college, but I was like having none of it. And I went and I bought myself a Fender Rhodes 88, and I said, I'm going to be a musician.
Yeah.
And I started playing with this guy, Buzzy Linhart.
Okay.
Who wrote Friends, the Bette Midler cover,
yeah,
and
yeah.
He wrote, he was a friend of Jimi Hendrix. I mean, he was one of these totally interesting people from way back in the day, you know, back when there were a few rock stars.
Right, right.
And toured with him for a bit, and that band turned into a group called The Generators, which became this record-setting bar band in Cleveland that we held all the records in all the clubs. We held forth on Friday nights at the Euclid Tavern, and, you know, it was just a thing.
Yeah.
And that band became the model for the Barbusters in Paul Schrader's film Light of Day.
Yeah.
Because he was looking for a band in Cleveland. He grew up in Lansing, I think Lansing, Michigan, or Grand Rapids, and Cleveland's a bit like that. He was looking for a band, and he went into the guys at the Agora in Cleveland and said, who's a band I can hang out with? And they said, oh, you should hang out with the Generators. So we ended up being the model for that band, Light of Day.
So did he get in, like, the van with you guys and go?
Totally. Oh, yeah.
God, that is awesome.
He's just done this new film that's really career-defining for him.
Recently?
Paul Schrader.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't think what it's called, but it deals with his crisis of faith, which is one of his favorite
games.
Subjects.
Yeah.
This movie originally was supposed to be autobiographical about him and his brother growing up.
Oh, really?
And he manages to deal with those crises.
Between Michael J. Fox and Joan Jett.
Right, he substituted Michael J. Fox and Joan Jett.
Right.
I think he originally wanted John Doe to play the one guy, but so I ended up in the, you know, so when he finally got back to making the movie, he called me up and said, I need you to put together a little band to do a cameo in the film. And the band's going to be called The Problems, and they're doing a cover of Peter and Gordon's True Love Ways.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
so
oh, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, and it's like it's college electro pop. And so I'm like, oh, God. So I called my friend Frank Vale, who I'd been in some bands with in Cleveland. I said, Frank, I need to put together this trio electro pop band. I said, can you be in it? And he said, sure. And I said, can you find someone else who's like a keyboard guy? And he goes, well, I know this guy Trent Reznor. So Trent Reznor had been playing with this band, The Urge.
Yeah.
Which was Trent on this keyboard with a swivel stand, so he could sort of dance around
it. Do his thing, yeah.
Do his thing, and a bass and drums, and they were a cover band.
Yeah.
So we called Trent, so Trent came in on board, and so we had this band called The Problems, which was me and Frank Vale and Trent Reznor, and I was, you know, had my hair spiky and was banging on something. And
like
syndrome.
A Simmons drum, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, and I was totally goofy, and you know, it's Trent's only quote film appearance. Well, it's actually my only film appearance as well. But
oh, really?
I think so.
How? I mean, what was he like then? Is he weird and intense?
I didn't know him very well. Okay. He certainly did what he was supposed to do. I think he burned some bridges in Cleveland, and I think that a lot of people who are that brilliant do tend to
piss everyone off.
Piss everyone off.
That's understandable.
I think you have to step on some people to get somewhere in politics, in music.
In life?
It's not something I like.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think Trent's enormously talented, and he's done amazing stuff.
So when did you move to LA a couple years after that? What'd you do during that time? Would you just like write songs and like?
Oh, I was in that band, and then I quit that band, and then I had another band, and then I quit that band, and then I had another band, and quit that band, and. And Thanksgiving, like 1989, I got a knock on my door in Cleveland Heights, and it was this guy. He was totally off the wall. He said, "You should move to LA." He said, "I have freaking flyer miles. I'll give them to you." I was like, "What?" So a week later, I got on a plane and moved to LA, and started meeting people. Started a band, played South by Southwest, I think in 93, got a publishing deal with Ken Levitan's publishing outfit at the time, did some demos, got a record deal with EMI, Guardian, one of their little labels.
That was the Borrowers,
it became the Borrowers, yeah. Actually, the Borrowers started out as this band with this gorgeous, fantastic vocalist, named Cheryl Stryker, and she was very much in the mold of Maria McKee, mm-hmm. who I, you know, absolutely loved.
Yeah.
And right as things were getting interesting, she moved away, and so wow. I had to kind of swallow my whatever and become the lead singer, and that was me suddenly finally saying, okay, I'm going to be the lead singer in this band.
Yeah.
And very shortly thereafter, things started to happen.
So once things started to happen, you guys, the way that I heard about you was you guys had the best, publicist in town in Will Sexton. I can't remember if he called or... Remember when he used to drive around and just come go to people's houses throughout the day?
Yeah.
He had, like, a little circuit he ran?
Will.
Well, he had this, hey, you got to... It was before social media, before email. Like, that guy literally had Will to go find social. Everyone, call people, and be like, hey... You gotta go see my friend's band. They're so great.
Will, love Will Sexton. Will Sexton's the reason I moved here.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Will Sexton called me one day. I had met Will because he was published by maybe the same publisher or something. They put us together.
Rondor or something.
Rondor. Yeah. They put us together in a room on La Cienega at my publishing place where I had a music room. And we wrote and got to know each other. And he called me up while after that and said, hey, I got some gigs for you. You bring the band to Austin. So we were kind of like, sure.
Yeah.
So we got in our van and we had this, I think it was, we were going to play South By, and Will said, I've got all these gigs for you. So we show up in Austin. We're staying at, on floors at people's houses. And Will had all these gigs booked, but they weren't really for the borrowers. They were Will Sexton gigs.
Yeah.
And
just
Will
giving them away.
And Will was just giving them away. Will would get up, and it went on for days. It went on for days. Will would get on stage and he'd play a couple of songs and he'd go, okay, I want you to watch my friends the Borrowers. And then he'd just go sit in the back for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a gift. I didn't realize at the time what a huge gift it was that he'd given us.
Yeah.
But And I was raised in, I was so taken with Austin back in the day.
Yeah.
I still am. When I was raised in Cleveland, if you were different, this was in the 70s, if you were different, you stuck out like a sore thumb. And you didn't really get much props. You didn't get a lot of love.
Right.
And of course, this is the kind of, milieu that gave us the Dead Boys and Peru Ubu and Devo.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're different, well, you're different. But you go into a bank to get a loan if you're a musician in Cleveland and they just laugh you out of the door,
Right.
And then I moved to L.A. And in L.A., everyone's trying to be as different as they can.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, it makes you puke. It's like everyone is, just being as weird and different as they can. And but still, you're kind of, you still can't get a bank loan or anything like that.
Right.
And then I'm in Austin, and it's like the word doesn't even exist. It's like there's no such thing as being different.
No.
At that time in Austin,
definitely.
There was no such thing as being different.
Yeah.
It's such a place for individuals to be individuals. And it was just taken for granted that everyone was going to be who they were going to be.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you walk in to a bank in Austin and say, I'm a musician, and they go, great, who do you play for?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that record.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a seat.
Yeah.
And that was the Austin that I moved to. It was just like a breath of fresh air. It was amazing.
Right.
So.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, when did you move here in 96? You moved in like around the corner from me, which was awesome.
I moved in right around the corner from you in 96.
Yeah.
96.
It was a great time.
It was a great time. You had Gowdy.
Yeah.
The trio.
Yeah, yeah.
With Einar and Kyle.
Yeah.
And we used to play all the time at Steamboat, you and I.
Yeah. And then we played together. We had a residency at the Ritz before it was a movie theater.
Right.
But
we wrote some songs together.
We did?
Yeah.
Really good songs.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened with the first Borrowers record? You guys toured a lot on that record?
We toured a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
It was interesting because it was like a label that was the. It's like the Gregorian chants was like the big
thing
that it had done.
It was a crazy situation. This guy, I can't remember his name. He was a publisher. He's a book publisher, and he had put this record out, the Gregorian chants,
that did huge,
or something like
sold
that.
Sold millions.
It was a million seller, and so EMI says, "Well, this guy's brilliant. We got to give him a label."
Yeah.
So they gave him a label. So we got signed to it. But, I mean, there were problems with that label, and there were problems with the management, and there were problems with all labels, and there were problems with all management companies at that time.
Right.
You know, I found out long after the fact that our promo person had been doing things like telling us that the label wanted us to release this song as a single, and telling the label that the band wanted to release this song as a single,
right?
And it ended up having our second single was a song that neither us nor the label really wanted to release because the promotions person had manipulated us both. It was just one of these crazy things.
Wow.
And you know, it was right at the end of record labels, so
yeah.
A year or two after that record came out, you know, that we were bought out of the contract. The label was folding. EMI was folding, so.
But you still had your publishing and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
You still had your deal. Were you still writing with people?
I was still writing with people. I think I grew very, you know, after all that stuff went down in the late 90s with record labels and the music business, I grew very disenchanted with everything, and I sort of said, okay, I'm just closing off all that stuff. And I had been producing records since, I think my first record I produced in 78, you know, in Cleveland. But I took what little money I got from the buyout was left over after, it took us 2 years to get our check. But
right.
And I bought a bunch of recording gear. And I said, I want to make records. That's what I want to do. I want to keep making records, and I want to do it without interference from publishers and record labels, and there were a lot of like-minded people at the time.
Yeah,
and so I holed up. I had a little studio on South Manchac, and I ended up buying this sort of ranchette, you know, where I built a studio.
Yeah,
and I was in a bunch of bands still in Austin. We had this band, Kitty Gordon.
Kitty
I think
Gordon,
you remember,
yeah,
which
of
was
course.
Which
it's a great band.
Which was a great band. I've actually just been going over some of the old material, and I have an anthology of like 30 songs that I want to do something with.
Yeah.
And then I ended up playing with Bruce Hughes and the All Nude Army for 5 years at the Saxon Pub, and went to Japan with them, which was great.
You played with Ian for a long time?
Played with Ian Moore for quite a while, and did two records with him.
How was that?
It was great.
Yeah.
It was fun. Yeah. And, I mean, I played with Ian when he had... when he was fighting his audience. No, when he had rejected being the next blues machine out of Austin.
Right.
And, you know, we did a tour. I think it was just him and I and Nina. And, you know, I was playing bouzouki and melodica and bass. And Nina was sitting at a kick drum and a snare drum and playing 12 string at the same time.
Right.
And Ian was playing sitar,
right,
and it was just this bizarre, wonderful musical.
He had great songs at that time. I mean, he's a great songwriter. Yeah. His song, he blossomed as a songwriter to me during that time. He made records that I really connected with.
I think it was a real conscious decision on his part.
No, it was, yeah.
and he pulled it off.
Yeah.
And he did. He moved. He moved out of Austin. He moved to Vashon Island in Washington.
Tried to find his place.
And that's what... You know, I'm constantly telling people, if you want to reinvent yourself, that's one of the best ways to do it, is to move.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, I did a tour with him in 2007, which was his first one where he was playing, like, How Does It Feel Again? So, like, I got in after hearing all these stories about, like, oh, yeah, no, he won't do anything, to where he's like, dude, I'll do a 5-minute guitar solo, don't worry about it, let's just go. You know what I mean? So... I was on the Ian's back, and he's playing guitar again.
Well, you know, it's a process.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he had to do. He had to divorce himself from it.
and
go out and be this new person that he wanted to be.
Yeah.
Or his own person.
Yeah.
Instead of what everyone else wanted him to be. And then once you get that under your belt, then it's a lot easier to sort of quote yourself from before.
Sure.
Because you have a perspective on it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think all musicians do that. I'm certain I do it.
I do.
There have been periods in my life where I didn't want to play any songs from the last band I was in, or
right.
the previous band, or it's like, no, that's old me.
Yeah.
But now I'll just go through the 150 or so songs I've written and say, well, that one sucks, but yeah, this one, I like this, I'll play this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, those are things that, like, I mean, even in my own experience, I've not put out anything in a long time. Haven't really done anything since Liars and Saints, just simply because I couldn't find a new thing to do, and until I found a new sort of voice, I felt like, oh, I think I gave it enough time where people won't be pissed off that I'm not playing, except they still come up running up, cellophane, man, cellophane!
That's what I did. Yeah. Didn't I do that at your show?
Yeah.
But I waited till after the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of cool, too, to be able to look back, and once you have that distance, you're like, oh, I want to play that song.
You know right, I mean? And sometimes it's really fun to have your new self inserted into that song, because you have, it's kind of like hearing a new song for the first time. You go, oh, that's interesting. I never understood what I was saying there.
Right.
You know? And, wow, what if this is a piano part instead of a guitar part? And you get to kind of deconstruct and reconstruct it. And it becomes, it's a great feeling when that happens, when you can go into one of those old songs and realize that it's still meaningful and realize that it's still valid.
Right.
And realize that it's still a good song.
Yeah.
And then reinterpret it or be able to wear it again as a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going through your discography as a producer and sideman and stuff, and man, I forgot how many great albums you made. A lot of them. Those Ian records you made were great. You did those... the first couple of Heathen records, right? The Heathens?
I did a live record for the band of Heathens, and I did one Foot in the Ether.
Right.
Which was
kind of the first one that kicked off their...
Probably.
Yeah.
I think it was, And that was a fun record to do.
Yeah. That crazy Bob Schneider... Galaxy Kings.
That was a long time ago. That was before I had built the studio.
Oh, yeah, so when it was just in your house. I was reading that when you were saying built the studio. I was like, oh, yeah, I've been there when you did... Didn't you do Taylor Davis's album, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a couple records for him. But
yeah.
Yeah, we were doing Galaxy Kings, and I had the drummer set up in the living room, and I had poor...
Lovejoy?
No. Lovejoy was...
At the piano, which was just
in the piano, I think it was in the control room with me.
Okay.
And then, who was the guitar player and the bass player? Roscoe Beck.
Ooh.
And,
I know exactly who you're talking about. Mitch.
Mitch Watkins.
Yeah, Watkins.
And I think it was that who, and I had them both in my bedroom. Mic'd, and there was no AC, and they hated me. They will hate me to this day. And they were like, what the is this?
But you guys had to track that record live. That was kind of the vibe of that.
We tracked it live. Yeah. We tracked it and mixed it in 3 days.
That's awesome.
And the last day and a half was just me and Kevin Lovejoy just working on keyboards and mixing. And I think I stayed up for 28 hours or something.
Jesus.
The last day of that, the last part of that recording session. And then I was sick for 2 weeks.
Wow.
I mean, my system just didn't take to it. No, it's a great record.
Yeah, it is
a great
record.
But it almost killed me.
Yeah.
Physically, but.
They'll get you.
Yeah, and then, I was just looking through some old stuff. I have, I did this really great record with Mundy, who's an Irish artist.
Yeah, who is that guy?
So Mundy is, at the time was, and probably, he was more popular than U2 in Ireland. I mean, he's like the golden child. So that record went platinum as soon as it came out.
Wow.
It's called Raining Down Arrows. And
did you do it here?
I did it here, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Monday, so remember India Records?
Yeah, of course.
So India Records was the label that we started as a collaborative.
Yeah.
India Records did a tour. And it was Will Sexton and Jeff Klein.
Okay.
And Kitty Gordon.
Oh, I remember that.
And we were all each other's bands.
Right.
So our motto was like three bands, one van, no cowboy hats.
Right, right.
And so Will would get up and play his set, and me and Nina would back him. And then Jeff would get up and play his set, and Will and me and Nina would back him.
Right.
And then Kitty Gordon would get up and do his set. We were playing The Hideout in Chicago. Great little club. And everyone's drunk. And this Irish guy says, hey, can I get up and jam with you? And so he gets up and jams with us, and he's great.
Yeah.
So we're playing all this music, and he buys Will Sexton's record that I had just finished doing, Scenes from Nowhere.
Yeah, great record, by the way.
Great record.
Yeah.
Will's just such a great songwriter. And 2 years later, I get this call. He says, yeah, it's Monday. I jam with you at The Hideout, and I want to do a record with you.
Wow.
And I said, well, you can come over and you can sleep on the floor and we'll do a record. So yeah. I came over and we did this record. And I was like, yeah, this crazy Irish guy. And then it turns out, well, this crazy Irish guy is like...
Huge.
Is huge.
That's awesome.
And that record came out and it went, it charted at number one.
Wow.
And went platinum immediately. And so I've actually been in contact with Mundy lately because... He occasionally comes to the United States to do shows, and I had hooked up some other people to work with him and do joint tours and stuff. Wonderful man.
That's cool.
Wonderful man.
That's awesome. And the Wendy Colonna and Jess Klein, those records are all really good. What's Jess doing? Is she still living here?
Jess moved to the Carolinas. Okay. She just bought a house, and she's doing a new record with, I think, some very talented people out there, and I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Yeah.
I did 5 records with her.
Wow, that's a lot, man. That's great.
Including one that was just outtakes from a live show at Strange Brew.
Okay.
It's called Bootleg, and it's a great record. It's all live. And they were nice enough to track us when we were recording. And I just went and mixed it.
They recorded a lot of stuff.
They did.
Are you guys still doing those Tips concerts out there?
Yeah, we are. We're down for the season right now because it's so hot, but yes. We'll open up.
Tell me, how do people find it? What's the...
Tipsconcerts.com.
Okay, that's easy.
Tipsconcerts.com, and it's called Tips Concerts because it's held in a 1964 Avion trailer.
Right.
With a stage built in front of it, and the trailer's name is Tips.
Okay.
And the trailer's name is Tips because Wendy Colonna paid for the trailer...
With Tips.
Using Tips.
Yeah. How's she doing? Is she getting out and playing? She's a mom now.
She's doing great.
Yeah, good.
She's playing. She's working on new music. And we all, things.
Things keep on going. What are you working on now? Who's?
I am, I'm talking to some groups in the North about working.
All right,
I just finished up the 1-2-3 Scream first record I'm working with. This very talented girl named Morgan Meyer, doing somewhat of the same thing. She's a really great songwriter, doesn't have a band, and we're doing a studio collaboration, which is turning out really well. What else am I doing right now? Oh, I just mixed Ginger Lee's new record.
Oh, awesome.
I like to say I'm semi-retired. And when I started saying I was semi-retired, I got really, really busy. So I'm going to keep saying I'm semi-retired.
Yeah, just keep on saying you're semi-retired.
Yeah.
What can people... This album, Lit, that you guys did, is going to be available. iTunes, Spotify. Are things on... I don't have Pandora, and I don't deal with Pandora. I made a choice early on.
I don't know. I know it's going to be on Spotify, right. And I'm sure it's going to be on iTunes, and... one of the things that Janet and I have been able to do is divvy up responsibilities what happens, and those are her responsibilities.
I
have no freaking idea where it's going. It'll come out through all the channels, and it's coming out next Friday, and we hope people will download it and listen to it and take it for what it is. It's fun music.
It's great music.
with a message.
It's good. You're a great producer, a great musician, and a great collaborator.
Oh, thank you, John.
I've actually never heard anything where I was like, oh, God, what is that? You know what I mean?
Well, give me a couple of years.
Yeah, okay. Is there anything else I'm missing? Wait a minute. So you played with Joan Baez, I've read that, at the Newport Folk Festival. You wrote a song with her. What's the name of that song?
No, I wrote a song that she covered.
That she covered, sorry.
So I wrote a song called Mercy Bound that was on the Bar Hours record, and Joan Baez covered it on one of her later records, and then invited me to join her on tour. And she did this great tour where she had covered a lot of songs from sort of unknown songwriters. I was one of the unknown songwriters. And she just invited them all on tour. Gene and Betty Elders, also from Austin.
That's awesome.
We're on that tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, we played the Newport Folk Festival. It was awesome. And I had previously met Gillian Welch down in Nashville when I was sort of assigned to write with her down there by my publisher. We never wrote a song. We went to Southern Thrift and went thrift store shopping instead. But they showed up at Newport, her and David, in this like 1969 Cadillac convertible or white Cadillac convertible. They were touring, and it was a wonderful time.
I remember that first Gillian Welch record. You were the one. You turned me on to that.
Yeah. I ran into Gillian. I first saw her at the Bluebird in Nashville years ago when I used to hang out in Nashville quite a bit. And I was so taken. I was like, oh, this girl is real. She's a real thing. Wearing this blue print dress, no makeup.
Yeah.
I said, she's got to be right out of the backwoods, West Virginia. And I went out with her. You know, I went bar hopping with her that night. We went and saw Sarah Hickman at the Ryman. So I ended up subsequently doing a Sarah Hickman album many years later.
Right.
But I was, you know, sitting there talking to Gillian and I'm going, so tell me about yourself. Where are you from? She goes, oh, I'm from Orange County. I used to work at Disneyland. Yeah. And I went to Berklee School of Music. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that was a weird thing, because I was sure that she was like some Appalachian lady as well.
She was the first person that I ever met that went to Berklee School of Music and came out and like really, really used that school to be something amazing. Before then, everybody that went to Berklee came out like this kind of jazz dude.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And then there was this, I think Berklee upped their game, but we started to have all these amazing musicians come out of Berklee that were doing really important things. She was one of the first in my experience.
Huh.
But then, so Joan Baez covered that song, and that was a really great thing for me
amazing.
To be able to say, yeah, Joan Baez covered one of my songs.
Someone that's known as one of the great songwriters of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And then recently that it was used as a title track on Edwin McCain's new album.
Oh, really?
So Edwin McCain's last album was Mercy Bound.
Wow, that's amazing.
So he covered it as well. So that's kind of cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Gene Simmons covered a Kitty Gordon song.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes people, when I'll say that to them, I think it was Alex Vallejo. We were doing something at Austin Music Foundation. We were having a meeting in the conference room. And I said, like, yeah, you know, Gene Simmons covered that song, Somebody Beautiful, by... And everybody loved, like, those guys loved your songs. You know what I mean? Like, there's those local bands where you still can sing their songs. You know what I mean?
Right.
And to us, they were hits as well. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you. That was a great song.
No, like Cellophane. Like, nobody
like
knows
Cellophane.
That song anywhere, but to you, that's like the number one hit of like 1996.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and 97, and 98.
So when I played it for him, to hear Gene Simmons sing that melody is pretty hilarious, because it's you're used to you and Nina singing it together. And Somebody Beautiful, you know.
You know, it's a hoot. Matt McCormick brought him to Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up at my studio with Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
Sitting there going, oh, let's try this. Hey. You know, he's a really interesting guy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you're too fat to be in a band. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But at some point somebody, I don't know if it was me, I don't think it was me, but somebody played him some of the Kitty Gordon stuff. And a couple months later, I got a call. I said, hey, we just want to buy the track. want to buy the tracks. And so I said, okay, we'll send you the tracks. So we sent him the tracks, and he put his vocal on it and put it on a record.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gene Simmons.
You know, it's a strange world.
It takes all kinds.
It's a strange world.
It was on his solo album, right?
The album was called Asshole.
It's a great name. That's a great name. Any new bands that you've seen through Black Fret that you're like, oh, this band, you got to see this band?
Swimming with Bears.
I've not heard them.
Swimming with Bears. Great. Great, great, great band.
Okay.
That's been my... I don't want to say that's been the only one, because I know there have been others, and I'm thinking... Goodfield.
Oh, yeah, they're really good.
Really good
band.
Yeah. Janie Allen Bryant.
Amazing.
And Jamie Harris.
Yeah.
Who's
amazing.
Who's, I think, going to be Austin's gift to the world for the next three decades.
Yeah, she's pretty amazing.
She's brilliant. Yeah. She's brilliant. And there's... That's a drop in the bucket. There is so much
talent here.
People, you know, decry what's going on with the city and with the Austin music scene and this and that and clubs closing, but there is so much talent here, and you go to other towns in the country, and you go see live music, and they go, "This is, check these guys out," and you're like, "Wow, they're okay."
Yeah.
But you don't understand, where I come from, it's world-class music every night, every club.
John D. Graham said the music scene here is like, you have to be this tall to get in. You know what I mean? You got to be this good.
Yeah.
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 It's amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's so much going on. I can't keep track of it, but Black Fret is helping me to...
To branch out.
To branch, to, well, just to hear stuff.
Yeah. Darren.
Darren Murphy.
So the album is Lit. The band is 123 Scream. Their EP comes out it'll be this Friday, July 13th, 2018.
Yep.
Mark Addison. You can find them at 123scream.com and theairystudio.com is your studio.
A-E-R-I-E, theairystudio.com.
Yeah. Thanks for doing the show, man. I love you.
Oh, I love you too, man. So much. Such a pleasure.
Yeah. Yours and mine. All right, Mark Addison. What a great conversation, man. My dear old friend. Always great getting to hang out with him. It made me miss him. Made me miss hanging out with him and making music with him. I got to get back to it. His new band, 123 Scream, a collaboration with artist Jenna Pochop, released their first EP, their debut EP, Lit, this Friday, July 13th. Go to 123scream.com. And find out what you need to do to get it. I'm sure it'll be available on all the places where you stream and download music. You can also find Mark Addison at his studio, which is airystudio.com. He's a great producer, man. He's made a lot of great records, and he's a fantastic collaborator. I can attest to that, as I've worked with him many times, and it's always been a great time. I love Mark Addison, and this new 123 Scream EP, Lit, is absolutely fantastic. It's a good time, and it's just in time for summer. Add it to your summer playlist. I know I will. All right. Lit comes out this Friday, July 13th. Don't forget, when you're out there checking out 123scream.com, you can always subscribe to this podcast. It is available wherever you stream and download your podcasts, including Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcast App, Android Podcast App, and iTunes. Tune in, Overcast, all the places. Get in there, get involved. You'll get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday. Please follow us. Please like us. Let us know how we're doing. You can also like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy. All right? Here's some more music from the debut EP from the band 123 Scream from their EP Lit. This is Jenna Pochop and Mark Addison. 123 Scream. Have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down. We'll be right back.
was trying to put on the right face. I carried everything I knew inside of my guitar case. Hymns in the choir that came with an impossible key change. And I kept changing the key and they kept looking at me strange. Playing for change at the checkout of a grocery. Playing for strange looks on the steps of my university. Playing for coffee like I wasn't worth anymore. And I got blood on my strings. It was my devotion to the hardcore. Spilling out unformed thoughts every night on the open mic. Spitting out deformed throbs of my heart when the time is right. Stomping flip-flops on the asphalt in the middle of the summer. Making fun of those jerks driving by in their Yukons and their Hummers. And we were earnest and naive and saviors, and it was all truthful. But some of these thoughts in our head never turned out to be useful. We thought we desired the lives of the beaten down troubadours, but martyrs don't walk through their own open doors. When the headphone meets the ear and the artist beats the fear, is there a system to this art? Like online, a thumbs up is cheaper than funneling all those nickels and dimes into Bandcamp, into iTunes, into Spotify, into Rhapsody. How much do you value the commerce that comes in the melody? Am I a scroll through check-in, tiny light in your day? Or is this gonna be a currency on the level of the New York Exchange? My stock, my rise and my fall. And I know that it might flatline and my calves might start to burn from the rate of the incline. So you have to understand, gonna do this without regards to time or cost or money or success. I'm talking yours, I'm talking mine, I'm talking nobody's gotta get undermined. But I'm gonna do this anyway, and I'm gonna hate this if I don't find a way. And I will not be the one who waits around for the next hope. Passivity, it's gonna string us all up faster than a good rope. And I want all these things to collide like money and art, and one we work hard for and one we think is hard. It pulls us out of the hell that happens to us every single day. And I say no doctor, no lawyer can perpetually save.
But the headphone meets the ear.